Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. As usual, the monkfish materials are behind tab 13. Following the last committee meeting, 10, sorry. That was yesterday. As usual. I see, with that in mind, just woken up. So, anyhow, the following the motion to initiate framework 7 at the last council meeting, the PDT met to discuss some measures for the northern management area, and the committee met on the 2nd of November to discuss that and to discuss the draft outreach paper that we have for our kit share amendment. Phil's got a presentation on the PDT analysis. I've got a motion on behalf of the committee, and then I'd like to have a short discussion on the outreach paper. So, go ahead, Phil.
Thank you. So this is the analysis of the alternatives for Framework 7, and it lays the groundwork for the committee's recommendation for preferred alternative. The final meeting of the framework will be at the January meeting for the New England Council, and the meeting right after that for the Mid-Atlantic. So the whole purpose for this framework is that in Amendment 5, we submitted our ACTs and ABCs for monkfish, and subsequent to that, we had the SSC meet review of the stock assessment that was conducted this summer, and made a recommendation for an ABC that actually is lower than the ACT that was in Amendment 5 for the northern area, 7,592 metric tons. So we examined the PDT. You know, it's a fairly narrow range from the status quo TAL of 5,000 metric tons to 7,592 for the ABC. So what we did was we took status quo alternative, which is 5,000 metric tons of landings plus the 11% discards. And that's 73% of the ABC. So then we said, okay, let's go halfway up to the ABC. So that would be 86.5% of the ABC. And we came up with this option of 6,567 metric tons. And then in between that is the 80%, which is, you may recall, in the development of Amendment 5, one of the options, it never stuck, but one of the options that the council considered was to set the ACT at 80% of the ABC. So we put that in there in order to give the committee and the councils a range of alternatives. And so that's how we derived those. The methods for this analysis is basically to take the various sources of catch data, landings data, which is the dealer reports, matching with the permits and the fishing vessel trip reports, and now we have the ability to also match the VMS activity codes and can assign areas to these reports. And there's a certain amount of matching that takes place. Not every single trip is perfectly matched to a dealer report and a BTR and so on, but it's much improved over earlier attempts at doing that. One of the assumptions, several assumptions inherent in this methodology, that the recent past performance of incidental catch remains the same going forward. We have really no ability to model changes to that, so we just carry forward. And it's been pretty successful over the years. I want to highlight in this next slide here, the shaded area is when we applied the first trip limits and days at sea in the northern area starting in 2007. That year, the landings came in spot on, 101% of the TAL. In 2009, the same management measures and the same TAL, the landings came in at 67%. And so you have essentially some things going on there that prevented the fishery from achieving the TAL in 2009. But what we did was we said, okay, in order to model the increase in the target, the catch target, from 5,000 to another number, those being those different alternative ACTs, we decided that we would take the midpoint between these measures, and increase on the increase. So there would be no increase for the 5,000 ton using the 2007 results, and there would be essentially a 50% increase using the 2009 results, because you need to increase 50% from 67 to get to 100. And the in between, the value that falls in between there. So we increased this 470 by 50% to get, and this by zero, so 25% increase would produce the result. And what we did in the next slide here is this is how we came up with the actual numbers. So for your ACTs percentage, those are the numbers in tons. These are the discards that are associated with that based on the most recent stock assessment. This then is your TAL converted from tons after subtracting the discards to pounds, column 3. Column 4, after subtracting the incidental landings to produce the TAL for the directed fishery, these numbers here would be the basis for calculating the days at sea and trip limits associated with the directed fishery. Then you also have incidental landings by limited access vessels, that is landings of monkfish not on a day at sea. Those are taken off the top to calculate the actual days at sea and trip limits for the directed fishery. So you have column 4, which is the total TAL, incidental landings, minus column 5, the category AC and BD, incidental landings. And then the times the 70%, because that's the proportion of AC landings associated with the TAL. 30% is the BD historically. So you end up with a TAL for the AC permit category and a TAL for the BD permit category. Then brought forward to the days at sea and trip limits associated. So we set up three different alternative approaches for each ACT. One is to retain the trip limit. Now, we only deal with the BD trip limits here because the 1,250 metric ton, pounds tail weight per day at sea AC trip limit is essentially the highest observed value in the time series, and it's not being caught anyway, so there's no basis for increasing it. And we're not decreasing here, we're increasing. That's part of the difficulty. So it's really, we're working with the BD trip limits or the days at sea. So we have three approaches to each ACT. One is to retain the trip limit and adjust the days at sea. One is to retain the days at sea and adjust the trip limit. And one is to calculate a trip limit associated with 40 days at sea, which is the baseline allocation in the original FMP. So you can see if we use the 2007 data where they caught 100% of the TAL with the 470 pound per day at sea trip limit and 31 days at sea, there would be no change for this ACT option. But in 2009, when they only caught 67% of the TAL, if you wanted to try and achieve this catch, you increase it by the 50% and then take the midpoint. Well, this is if we just increased it. The alternative will take a midpoint here between 470 and 701 for this option. Same thing with the days at sea. You increase the days at sea to achieve the TAL using the 2009 data, but not the 2007 data, and so on. We did this for all three ACT options and produced this range of alternatives. The shaded cells indicates what was solved for. So in the first option, 31 days at sea was fixed. We solved for the BD, as you can see, 586, that's midway between 470 and 701. 1250 stays the same. In the second option, we kept the trip limits the same as they are now, solved for a new day at sea value, 39, and so on. We did that for the three ACT options and came up with this complete range of alternatives. Couple of points, and then I'll go back here, and I will give you a little insight here. The committee is recommending the ACT at this value here, 86.5% of the ABC, and they're also recommending this option down here. However, they've rounded the number for the trip limit upwards, so you'll get that in the recommendation. But that's They are going with 40 days at sea and this value here. A few things on this. One point that we learned in doing this analysis is that it does not appear in the northern area that trip limits and days at sea allocations are limiting or constraining on a fleet-wide basis. There may be a few vessels for whom they are, but for the most part, the vessels are not catching their trip limits, and nor are they using their days at sea allocations. We talked about this at the PDT level and suggested that external factors are affecting that, such as changes in the multi-species regulations. Keep in mind, this is 2009, so this is not under the sector system. Maybe the commercial landings are telling us something about stock status that was not detected by the assessment. In other words, the catch rates are lower because the fish aren't there and we're just not seeing them. In the discussion at the committee meeting, there were some other ideas thrown around. For example, the cost of fuel is keeping some vessels from fishing in a manner that they used to fish for when they were targeting monkfish, they just tow for 4 hours, drill fishing, as it was called, that they're not doing that now. They're just being much more efficient in how they're fishing, going out there and not burning a lot of fuel, drill fishing. Another suggestion was that the offshore gillnet fishery no longer became profitable because of the lack of ability to land the large lobsters that they used to land, and then the combination of the large lobsters and the monkfish made it worthwhile, but without the large lobsters, the fishery was not viable anymore. So those were some additional suggestions as to why vessels are not using their days at sea. This is a distribution of days at sea usage for the northern area. As you can see, if they were allocated 31 days at sea plus 4 carryover, but this is what they used. This is one boat used 34, a couple used a little bit over 30, but most of the vessels are just using a few of their monkfish days at sea in the north. Similarly, the trip limits are not constraining. As you can look at this scale here, each one of these, this first row is a single trip, and this is what they landed when they could have landed 1,250 pounds of tail weight. As you can see on the scale, very few vessels landed even 1,000. Similarly, the Category B and D vessels, there is a little bit of a peak here, which suggests that a few trips were constrained by the trip limit. But if you look at the scale, that's 15 trips. We're actually bumping up against the trip limit. And just to show you I'm going to skip ahead here. This is for comparison to the southern area, where first of all, you see the scale here is 80, and you can see the trip limits. You know, the trips are constrained by the trip limit. They're bumping right up against it in terms of their landings. It's an obvious constraint there. One of the things that the PDT raised for the committee's consideration is in selecting the alternative, one thing that we can't predict is if there's a tipping point in that the allocation of days or the trip limits is not attractive at this point. But if you make the trip limit attractive, all of a sudden you might have a bigger influx of effort than we had anticipated. It's called a tipping point because, you know, at some point it may be worthwhile to go out and target monkfish and use up your days at sea targeting monkfish at a much higher trip limit. But apparently this is not really the case right now because there are other factors that are affecting the decisions that operators are using in targeting monkfish. And that's it. Any questions?
Any questions for Phil? Thanks, Phil. Terry?
Well, the committee had almost as many questions. Came up with the following motion. On behalf of the committee, I move that the preferred alternative in framework 7 set the ACT at 6,567 metric tons, or 86.5% of the ABC, and allocate 40 days at sea with trip limits of 1,250 pounds and 600 pounds tail weight per day at sea for permit categories AC and BD, respectively.
Committee motion. Discussion on the motion. Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Last chance. Right. Dr. Pierce.
Just to reflect on what was said by Phil, these trip limits that are being proposed as part of they're not restrictive, correct? Okay, right. I don't know.
Anyone else? Ready for the question? All those in favor, raise your hand.
Fifteen.
Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries. Terry?
The committee also discussed, was at that point a draft monkfish cat share scoping document, which is document 3. The intention is to bring this document to our public meetings along with a second document that's currently being drafted that will outline the status and nature of the fishery. We're in the process of scheduling the 8 to 10 meetings and are going to start with Rick's council in Virginia in mid-December. we're, you know, from Maine to Virginia, and following that, we're going to convene a joint AP committee meeting, and we'll report back to you at the January meeting with our progress at that point. I don't imagine many people have had a chance to read this, but if you have any questions or comments afterwards, just give Phil or I a call.
Any questions for Terry? Paul Howard?
Just one thing, Terry, that if the council agrees, just maybe a sentence about safety. You know, why are the councils considering catch shares? The council has talked about safety improvements in the past, and also there's been discussion about achieving OY, there's less uncertainty, management uncertainty with a catch share program than there may be than with a day at sea or catch per unit effort program. So safety and achieving OY may be some of the reasons why the council, you'd have to ask them. That should be.
Phil?
One other supplement to this that came up at the committee meeting that I'm going to complete is a one page or two describing how the referendum would work if we go with an IFQ type program, and we'll be basing that on some of the experiences in the Southeast region. So we'll have essentially two supplements to this, one being the description of the fishery, who's catching monkfish and so on, and the other being a brief description of the referendum. And Paul raised a couple of points. Do we need people to agree or disagree with those? I mean, we wrote this without the council actually weighing in on anything, so we can just throw that in as commentary or just...
Anyone else on the council? We got hands. Dr. Pierce, then Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, Terry, on the page 6 of the document where it references quota trading mechanisms, and it emphasizes in a very short sentence that any trading of quota would benefit from a clear, transparent, and efficient mechanism for quota transactions. Will there be anything else added to this particular discussion relative to expectations? That is, how transparent can it be? You know, confidentiality issues, for example. I've already expressed my concerns about groundfish sector management and how it's a black box. Confidentiality, we can't see what's going on between sectors, transferring between and within. So it would be helpful, I suspect, for there to be, for the benefit of those who care to comment, if we care to come to all of these meetings, it would be beneficial if they would could be given an appreciation of what are the overarching issues relative to transparency.
Yeah, good comments, David. Certainly, you can see by this, our effort was to try to keep it short and build from there. But I don't see any reason why we can't add another sentence to it. But in the spirit of keeping it brief, I mean, this is just what we're going to build on, hand out to folks to take home with them. As we've stated in the past, this is a real bottoms-up approach. We're going out to the industry to see if and what they want to do and build from there. So I think the first scoping meeting in Virginia will be very telling as to what we hear from the people. We'll be able to perfect our document from that point on.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, on page 3, there's a description of the referendum provision, and I assume the way it's written, we're still saying you only need a referendum if you develop an IFQ program. I would like to see a question asked that if you develop a sector program and it was subject to a referendum, would you be more in favor of it? Because the number one complaint I've heard about sectors is the fact that people felt that the program would have developed very differently if it had been subject to a referendum, that the fish would have been distributed very differently than they were. So I think it would be a very helpful question to ask, and even though it may not be required as the government currently defines a sector, I think even if we put it to a referenda, that you might get a very different product with much more industry support if there was a feeling that there'd be a referenda at the end of it. Thank you.
Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to follow up on Dr. Pierce's comment about transparency, it's not only important, I think, from a transactional standpoint, it's also important with respect to ownership and trying to manage the excessive share question if we go down that road. So we're learning that in surf clams now where the transparency of ownership is an issue. And you know, so I would hope that we could take some of the lessons that we've learned there and with the tilefish ITQ and think about the question of transparency in terms of what's required to be reported from an ownership standpoint as well as a transactional standpoint to ensure that we're able to manage that question effectively. But I think we can learn from some of those other examples of steps that we would need to take there. I just wanted to point out that this first meeting that we have in Virginia in December is just a scoping hearing. And we've spoken before, I know, about the need to be very deliberate and well engaged with our stakeholders as we go into this process. So I know we've talked before about trying to have some broader, perhaps workshops in which to address the concerns and ideas that are brought forward. But I would just point out that this first meeting is just a scoping discussion, and then from there, I assume the committee and councils will be working to lay out a plan for that type of very very thorough engagement with the fisheries participants.
Paul Howard.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. In terms of giving specific feedback to the chair and staff, I was wondering if the council then, without any motions, these are just ideas, but unless, you know, there's now three or four ideas, and is it the council's intention that they be added to the document, or that if there's a motion, they be added to the document? Because I'm not so sure all of them everyone agrees with. And this is very important. What is the, you know, why is the council doing a catch shares program? This is part of the early strategies and plans that we've been trying to do with interspecies and talk about things. I think Phil and Terry have done a great job with setting out, and there's just some other things that I think we need. But the question I have is, what are we specifically saying to Terry and Phil to get done?
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under types of cat share programs, of elements of individual allocation systems, group allocation systems, and other, I don't see anything in here about state permit banks. Does any, maybe I'm missing it, this is my first time through this. Is there any opportunity or will there be for state permit banks in monkfish, or is that deliberately or intentionally left out?
Under types, we've got I think where it came up is in terms of the ownership bank, who can own the shares, and we have listed permit banks, financial banks, investors, individual owners, operators. That shows up a little bit later in the document. I'm trying to draw your attention right to it. Page one. I'm looking. I think it shows up in the questions here. Sorry for taking so long. Who should be eligible to hold allocation? Vessel owners, crew, banks, dealer processors, NGOs, investors, community entities. I suppose we could throw in their permit banks, you know, state government or state-run community or state. To respond to Paul's question, I don't know that we need a formal motion. I've got some ideas here. And then, you know, I think if people object to some of the suggestions, that might help. Otherwise, you know, without objection, I can make some modifications to the document to reflect the comments that have been made here. And so if somebody objects, they could do it. Otherwise, I don't know. We need to go through a formal motion. There was no formal motion to adopt this or anything like that. So, you know, I think there have been some good ideas, some good suggestions. We'll go forward with that. I think with regard to David's suggestion, that's something that could come out in scoping. It doesn't necessarily have to be part of the document here. What we're trying to do here is just say what the Act requires in terms of the referendum. But, you know, it may be that that's what people want to do, and that will evolve in the process as we go forward. So I don't think we need I got Paul's suggestion and the transparency issues on ownership and transfers and the permit bank, state permit banks. Good to go.
Anything further from the council? Terry? Oh, sorry, Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, just a suggestion that under the key references, you might want to put in the NOAA catch share management policy. I assume that would be relevant to these discussions. Also, I'm glad to see that there is a very specific reference in here to the caution relative to ITQs. That's the one that references EcoTrust Canada. That's a good cautionary tale that will help those who pick up this document, if they care to go to it, get a better understanding of some of the downsides. So I'm glad that's in there. Thanks.
That's it under Monkfish?
That concludes my report.
Okay. Thank you, Phil. Thanks, Terry. We'll take a quick break and switch over for Groundfish.